A very good day to you all. Welcome back to the final Eye on the Liga from Mark here in English of 2016. As we head into the new year, the Spanish La Liga title race is still reasonably finely poised. Barcelona have 3 points off Real Madrid, who have that game in hand. They've been distracted by their Club World Cup success, which we'll be touching on in the show today. We'll have a look at Atletico Madrid. Are they set to lose another star centre-forward? And we'll have a chat about the last 12 months in Spanish football and perhaps what 2017 has entailed as well. I'm Ollie Wilson, your host as always, and I've got two great guests on the show and two fine gentlemen from Marca's web pages to finish off the calendar year with. Aldo Sainati joins us and Mark Mayo. Aldo, pleasure to have you on, mate, for the final show of 2016. Are you in the festive spirit yet? Have you got all the decorations up and everything like that?
I guess you could say that. Not too festive, but you know, lots of great football. Real Madrid with the suffering, you know, the little bit of a suffering there at the end to needed extra time to win the Club World Cup. But you know, yeah, good holiday spirit.
Finally, looking forward to a break, I'm sure, from all the discussion on the back pages and with the La Liga campaign taking its Christmas break now. Although I'm sure, Mark, there's going to be plenty to talk about over the next 3 weeks or so as we wait for Spanish football to come back, because there's always going to be transfer rumours as we head into the January transfer window as well.
Yeah, and we've always got things like the Lionel Messi contract and things about Ronaldo always kind of bubbling away under the surface, so we should have plenty to keep our eye on for the next few weeks.
Don't believe that either Ronaldo or Messi is going to be in the papers at all. And they never appear on the back pages of the Spanish football press. They're normally so quiet with their presence in La Liga and in world football. Gents, let's kick things off with Real Madrid today then on the show. The victory against Kashima Antlers, of all teams, one side that I did not expect to make it to the Club World Cup final. Needing extra time, Los Blancos with a 4-2 victory. Wouldn't you guess it, Cristiano Ronaldo picking up a hat-trick in the final, 2 goals in extra time to be able to give the European representatives victory in the Club World Cup, as it always seems to be. Mark, any pressure on Real Madrid at all just when they went 2-1 down? Did you sense there was any idea that Kashima Antlers would end up getting past Real Madrid and pulling off really one of the shock upsets in this tournament?
There's always that nagging sort of sense that a team is going to take it off of Real Madrid. But the thing is it, I got a real sense of deja vu from the Deportivo La Coruña game from a few weeks before. So effectively a team goes 2-1 up too early against Real Madrid. And you think any time is too early with the way that they've been scoring lately. And Real had so much time to impress upon their game, upon at the Antlers. And they were, in the end, really successful with that. And when you've got Ronaldo in the team, I think it's always important how people say that Barcelona would be nothing without Messi. It's games like this you'd realise how far down Real Madrid would be without Cristiano Ronaldo, because he really dragged them out there almost single-handedly.
So you think that Cristiano is still as important as ever to this Real Madrid side? Do you not think that it's a Madrid side that is starting to prepare, perhaps, and has the capability to not be as reliant on Cristiano Ronaldo?
I think this is a Madrid side that's kind of capable of dropping off and finding themselves in these bad positions, as they did against La Coruña. And they find themselves needing that inspiration. And obviously it's come from different players over the years and in recent weeks, certainly. But when Ronaldo does it, you do kind of look around the team and thought there was no one else capable of scoring a hat-trick against Kashima. And Ronaldo was the one who stood up and did it.
Aldo, a couple of decent games as well, really, for Karim Benzema, finding himself on the score sheet against Club America and in the final against Kashima Antlers. And for a man that's had a pretty disappointing end to 2016 in this early part of the La Liga campaign, he was somebody that will be very happy, you feel, to finally have some positivity around him after the boos and jeers and the debate about whether Morata should play up front and the fact that we saw Ronaldo himself thrive as the solo front man at times as well in the early part of this season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even in the final itself, he's sort of was the, I would even say, one of the most important players besides Ronaldo. I mean, obviously, Cristiano Ronaldo had the hat-trick, but Karim Benzema was really putting Real Madrid's attacks together. And, you know, he has really had a great Club World Cup, and he really needed that. I mean, as we were saying, he has this threat from Morata, his injury concerns in the beginning of the year, also the Valbuena sex tape scandal. So, I mean, there are lots of different things that were maybe raising a few questions, and I mean, some of us were even wondering if he was as undroppable a part of the BBC as maybe Bale or Cristiano. But I mean, right now he's still, you know, the guy that's leading the line. He's a very important player for Real, and he, you know, that uptick in form was really couldn't have come at a better time, because there were really a lot of questions surrounding him.
There's something about Karim Benzema, isn't it? He's just got controversy, just kind of naturally follows him, doesn't it? You think about Gareth Bale and Luka Modric, all these quiet players off the pitch, but Benzema, even when he's playing for France, there's always stuff that's coming at him, isn't there?
No, there's a sense that even now he was kind of more quietly in these past few weeks putting in performances here and there that maybe other players were kind of stealing the show, with Sergio Ramos with the late headers. But I mean, Benzema's form has really improved, and he kind of for once is doing so in a way that might not be like the person who's, you know, most obvious about things.
Do you think this leads to Benzema now? There's no discussion of him moving in January. He always seems to be a name that crops up in the January transfer window for at least one or two Premier League sides, and almost every single transfer window is related to Arsenal, of course, and Arsene Wenger is a big fan of the centre forward in terms of his goal scoring ability. Do you think this just puts it to bed for a transfer window, the fact that he has now finished off 2016 with a bit of positivity around him, and I think Real as well at times have realised how important he can be, even when he's had his critics in the early part of this season, in the first half of the La Liga campaign. It's not been a disastrous one for him by any stretch of the imagination in terms of some of his performances on the pitch. He's still been grabbing a few goals.
Yeah, he kind of scores when you least expect it, in a sense of the word, is that whenever people are saying, oh, he's done awfully, then he kind of goes back down. Then the conversation moves on elsewhere, he'll pop up and then he'll score. He won't move in January because Madrid don't have the capacity to sign a replacement, is as simple as I see it.
And of course they've had their transfer ban lifted in the is it summer months, isn't it, coming up. Madrid will be able to operate once again. That transfer ban has been reduced. It's interesting with Los Blancos as they finish up 2016, just how strong they have finished the campaign suddenly. After you had at the perhaps a big start of last, well, 2016 now, we're not in 2017 just yet, but you had the unknown, if you will, with Zidane about to come in, and it was all kind of wasn't going wrong per se for Real Madrid too disastrously. But in this 12-month stretch, Real Madrid are a side that have now just gone from strength to strength to strength and finishing on top of the world, so to speak, Aldo. This is exactly what everybody behind the scenes will have wanted, what the fans will have wanted. And it's given them a great pedestal to push on once again and try and reclaim that greatest team on the planet title that Barcelona seemed to have held for a number of years now.
Yeah, and I think they did it quietly, just like Zidane, kind of, you know, in the background, soft-spoken, kind of leading by example, not saying too much, very quietly putting together this incredibly impressive unbeaten run, reaching Pep Guardiola's record with Barcelona. And, you know, they've done so behind the scenes. And, I mean, I for one, you kind of don't even realize that they're stringing together so many victories, because you think, oh, maybe their collective play isn't as great as it should be, or the squad might be capable of doing more things. But you know, 20 matches in, you're saying, oh, this team just doesn't lose, and that's obviously a lot of it is down to Zinedine Zidane. And obviously this is a very different spot they find themselves at the end of 2016 than Real did at the end of 2015 with Benitez and all the problems they were having back then. So it is a year where you get the sense that they've you know, maybe caught up a little bit with some of the other big teams, and then obviously with the huge Champions League win, they've reestablished themselves.
Let's talk about, because you touched on it just a moment ago in terms of the Messi contract, Mark. Let's talk a little bit about Barcelona and how their 2016 is going to be coming to an end, and particularly on this Messi contract. The discussion of the incredible figures in terms of wages that might be needed to secure Messi's services, and the very interesting comments by Luis Enrique about how Lionel Messi shouldn't be taken for granted by Barcelona fans, and how we need to, as the collective football world, sit back and really appreciate what we're looking at here as a footballer and perhaps one of the greatest of all times, and not just assume that Messi will always be there. It was quite interesting, that line of thought, if you will, because you can look at it in a couple of ways around Messi. Either Luis Enrique is saying, let's keep Messi on this pedestal, let's basically say that he is one of the greatest of all time and not just take him for granted so that he continues to be in love with the club and he remains? Or should we look at it as this is a Barca side that need to remember they have one of the best players in the world and perhaps of all time right now, and things might be a little trickier in future when Messi is gone, whether it's off to China in the near future or when he retires in the long-term future? I just would like to know both your thoughts on this line of thought, if you will, around Luis Enrique's comments about Messi.
I think the most important comments that I always remember back to is when Neymar signed and he said, like, to the Camp Nou crowd, "I am here to make Messi the best in the world," or to help Messi in his pursuit. And what we had the most recent summer was no striker wanted to go to Barcelona because they all said, "We're not going to play." So you've got two contrasting sort of attitudes there as to how players have to come into the side to make them better. And Messi himself, part of the contract dispute is that he wants to ensure that the best players are going to be playing around him, but how can they be playing around him when they know they're not going to play and they won't sign? Because that Suarez has got his new contract, Neymar's got his new contract, the MSN is untouchable for the foreseeable future. So it's kind of almost a catch-22 situation that they found themselves in because of Messi, and effectively I think the only route they can take is to continue having Messi on that pedestal, because there's no way I don't see how they can let him go and possibly make up for that.
They might not have a choice in terms of whether they choose to let Messi go or not, considering the amounts of money that's being thrown around by Chinese club Hebe China Fortune, and fortune, I guess, is the operative word there in terms of how much Messi could be paid if he went off to join the likes of Carlos Tevez in China. And even if he stays at Barca, rumoured to be over $615,000 a week if he stays at Barcelona. Those are the contract numbers that are being thrown around in the papers at the moment. Barca won't be able to afford any player of any talent because they're paying the likes of Messi, Neymar and Suarez so much money anyway. There'll be no way that any high-calibre player will come.
Yeah, that's very true, and that's why they ended up with Paco Alcácer from the summer, and that's why he hasn't scored any goals.
Damnation on his start.
It's as simple as
Barcelona there.
The one goal in the Qatar friendly, though.
You know. Oh yeah, I mean, what a great strike! Even struggled to score against Hercules in the Copa del Rey first leg.
Well, anyone listening to this after the second leg, and he's banged a hat trick in, then we'll just quietly edit this bit out for that section.
Yeah, there'll be a pre Wednesday night and post Wednesday night version, I'm sure, of this podcast if that happens. What about Barca in general then? It's been a finish to 2016, arguably to forget in terms of the slip-ups that they've had in the Liga campaign, the loss to Alves, the defeat as well away at Celta Vigo, a side that are just shipping goals left, right and centre in the Liga at the moment and are now paying the price for it down in the middle of the table. The draws, of course, against Malaga and away at Real Sociedad too, the nervy game against Sevilla. There are a number of games which you can point to and say this hasn't been vintage Barca, to say the least. They have had injury problems as well, but even in the victory against Espanyol in the Catalan derby on the weekend, it wasn't great to watch. It was an efficient performance, and Barca were clinical in front of goal in terms of taking their chances, but it wasn't fast-flowing, tiki-taka, penetrative football that we've come to expect from this Barca side, Aldo.
Yeah, and you didn't... I mean, I guess you could say it was very contained. I think Espanyol, the first 60 minutes until Barcelona's second goal, they actually played quite well. They were very compact, and, you know, it took a very brilliant goal from Suarez to open things up. But I think that you can kind of see the argument Mark's making in that they needed Messi and, I guess, Iniesta, who's not getting any younger. They needed both of them to really open up the Espanyol defense. And you kind of see without them, they might struggle in terms of creating chances and scoring off opportunities. I think obviously towards the last bit of the game, they were able to dominate a lot more and they had a lot more of the chances of possessions. But until then, I think Kike Sanchez Flores doesn't have anything to be too upset about. In the end of the game, he even praised Messi and Iniesta and said, you know, this is what they do. And when they have one of those games where both of them are as inspired as they were, there's no defense that can really stop them. But yeah, and until then, they didn't have the attacking ability that they needed, but they were able to break through.
What do you both make of, again, we saw the impact of Andres Iniesta, we've seen the problems In terms of the new signings that have come in the last 18 months or so, haven't really gelled, taken to it. They don't appear to have the same amount of depth, Barca, that they used to. What do you make of the future for the Catalan club in terms of they will potentially be 6 points down on Real Madrid if Madrid win their game in hand? They haven't been all-encompassing and dominant on the Champions League stage, beaten, of course, by Manchester City, and then they could struggle when they come up against the big sides in the knockout stages, that's for sure. Although I imagine they should get past PSG, as I said last week, quite competently. They've had problems at the fullback position in terms of defensive ability, even though players can get forward. Nobody's really been able to replicate the quality that Jordi Alba has at that fullback position on either side of the field, and that's been problematic for them. It's a Barca side still with plenty of holes in it. Do you see them changing in any way, shape or form going into 2017 and being able to claw themselves back into this? Are Madrid fallible enough that there will be opportunities for Barca to capitalise in terms of the league title race?
I think the question about Madrid being fallible is obviously something that Barcelona can't control, and they spurned their best opportunity to control that by beating them just a few weeks ago, but they didn't. And the only thing that Barcelona fans, I would say, can really hope for at the moment, because I don't think they're going to do much business in January. They just have to hope that the likes of Andre Gomez, Denis Suarez, Sergi Roberto just continue to grow into the team and continue to adapt to the way of life of playing for Barcelona and the style, etc. That's where it's going to happen, because this is a very young team. In amongst all the old hands like Iniesta, etc., there's a very young sort of fringe that around, and they have to hope and rely on those players stepping up eventually.
Do you think this is a long-term plan then, Mark, rather than there being a short-term fix for when this golden generation, and I think one of the few times you can certainly say it has been a golden generation for Barca the last few years or so, it's not going to be a quick fix. There will be a blip at some point with the likes of Iniesta, now 32 years of age, for instance. Messi is going to be into his 30s, and there's still questions about his future at the Catalan club, and there always are, because so many other teams around the world that would be willing to pay the big money for him. Neymar and Suarez are both fantastic, and Suarez at 29 still has legs like Messi in him. Neymar only at 24, the Brazilian forward. But there still needs to be a longer-term rebuilding process around these players.
I do think that, because we talk about the Barcelona cutting the gap between them and Real Madrid, which will be at 6 points if Real Madrid win. There's a chance that can grow, of course. That can be 12 points by March, and then suddenly we're talking about Barcelona having to think about the next season as opposed to trying to win the league this season. And because that is a realistic possibility, then we have to entertain the fact that this is a long-term plan that's not going to click in this season.
Mm-hmm. Aldo, do you think Luis Enrique is part of that long-term plan? We've spoken before about these three-year cycles, if you will, at Barcelona. Do you think Luis Enrique is the man to build that long-term plan, as he is such a part of the furniture at the club?
I mean, that's the big debate with Luis Enrique. We talk about Messi's contract, but one of the things that the Barcelona board has been busy with is Luis Enrique's. And I mean, I think the first season in charge, when he won the treble, he was able to find short term solutions and was able to get the best out of the front three, and he really got the team playing well fairly quickly. His second season was obviously a bit different, a little bit more interesting, and then I think this third season he has the most challenging side that he's had so far. His squad is, as Mark mentioned, fairly young. It's still somewhat untested. You have really good players that are, pretty promising. But, for example, Denis Suarez, Andre Gomez, these are players that are very talented, but still have to prove themselves at a big club like Barcelona, and are still fairly young, and there's still some inconsistency amongst them. And so I think that right now in these next few months, we're going to see how well Luis Enrique can plan for the future, can integrate especially the midfield. I think that's the most interesting area. These past couple months we've been saying that without Iniesta, Barcelona's midfield is looking a lot different. It's not controlling matches. They don't have as much possession. We're really going to see what Luis Enrique is capable, what he has in mind. I mean, even recently, Rakitic has looked somewhat suspect. So I think there's a lot of pressure in these next 3-4 months to see what Luis Enrique is capable of doing. And it's obviously with Barcelona always a very thin tightrope, because you know, if you can't stray too much from the club's philosophy, but at the same time you need to win the important games and keep pace with Real Madrid in the league. So you know, if I have to make a choice, I'd say that Luis Enrique is either going to win trophies this season or he's going to move on.
It's very easy to forget that, what, 15 years ago or so, we wouldn't have said Barcelona were nailed on to even compete for a La Liga title and such thoughts of perhaps not make a Champions League. It's funny how football changes and those expectations change with the cyclical nature of football. You just wonder if Barca might have to take a, not a dip, if you will, but with the rise of this Real Madrid side at the moment, you wonder if Barca just need to go back to the drawing board a little and start rebuilding and building some more foundations for another future, a long-term future, if you will, inside the next 18 months to 2 years or so. Let's touch on around the league when we come back, and there's plenty of transfer talk already. The January transfer window hasn't even opened yet, but there's one big move that could be taking place with top player leaving La Liga. We'll come back onto that and a little bit more when we return here on Iron La Liga. To the show, transfer rumours flying around as always, and I know how much Mark and Aldo love to talk about hypothetical transfers and the possibilities of players leaving, but one that stands out already at the moment is been breaking in the last 12 hours or so, really. Manchester United preparing a summer move for Antoine Griezmann, the Atletico Madrid, of course, superstar who came third in the Ballon d'Or voting this year, and has really had an unbelievable 2016. Could be off to Manchester United in the summer of 2017. Aldo, what do you make of the potential move, if you will? £60 million is the figure that's being discussed, £60 million, that is, for Griezmann's services to go to Old Trafford. It's another big centre forward leaving Atletico Madrid. It almost seems like inevitable that this is going to happen when they get a player that starts firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, Ollie, I'm a little disappointed. I thought the player that we were going to be talking about here was James Rodriguez leaving La Liga, but I guess we can talk about Griezmann too.
He's always leaving La Liga, isn't he, James Rodriguez? I mean, that's just the constant rumor for 18 months.
Now that they have the ability to sign players in the summer, you get the sense that Real, you know, might be willing to let him go a bit easier because they have those squad positions opening up. But I guess, I mean, going back to Griezmann, I think that these last couple months, Diego Simeone has made him the center of his Atletico side. I mean, he's really changed the system to get the best out of Griezmann, and he's become, you know, their most important player by far. I mean, he was that beforehand, but you know, now with this new emphasis on attacking and, you know, getting more possession and creating more chances than they had in previous years, Griezmann is you know, the center of this team, and I think he's worth more than $60 million in today's market. I mean, if you have players like Pogba who are worth incredible amounts of money, this is someone who's already proven what he can do. Maybe it's less a signing based on potential and based more on what he's doing right now, but I think he would be worth more and would be an addition to any Premier League side. I mean, with that amount of space is opening up and that quick play, I think he could fit right in any side over there. And, you know, of course, he'd be an addition to any team.
Whether he fits or not, I mean, isn't quite the question. I imagine he's, as you say, be a wonderful addition to any side that wants to pick him up. But Mark, it's the fact that Atleti are once again a selling club, if you will. They want to make that move to be the consistent third side in La Liga. They have been for the last few years. But if they keep getting centre forwards that get to almost the top of their game and then get moved on elsewhere for big money, Simeone's going to get frustrated with that sort of attitude. The club's fans are going to be frustrated with that attitude. And it's a real nightmare for Simeone, who has to think about losing one of his key players all the time. He was able to do it when Falcao went, and he changed the system to fit Costa before Falcao went, and similar things have happened in the past when they've lost big players. But it must be agonising for a manager to see that, and it just is detrimental to the reputation and the, I guess, the philosophy of this side, isn't it?
Yeah, the thing is with Simeone is that effectively, I can't imagine, well, it's hard to tell at the moment exactly, but all of the signs suggest that no matter what state Atletico Madrid will be in, is that he will go in the next 2 to 3 years. So I can't imagine it's going to upset that. It may hasten that to an extent. In terms of what Atletico need to do to become a club that is no longer a selling club, it's kind of hard when they've just built a massive stadium. Arsenal had the same thing in the Premier League a few years ago, where you have to pay for these stadiums somehow, and you kind of sit back and analyse how much the sponsorship and everything's going to come in. You realise that there is a big old shortfall that you've got to make up, and historically Atletico have dealt well with being a selling club. There's no doubt about this, the fact that they've still grown in amongst that, and Griezmann's good mates with Pogba, so Manchester United might seem the obvious place to go. He can work with Zlatan as he kind of enters the twilight of his career. So there's a lot of plausibility to this. I don't think the £60 million is part of that plausibility. I agree that that should be much more. But, I mean, Atletico have bounced back from these stuff before. We've seen it happen before. So I don't think it would be too much of a shock if they did agree a big fee that they can then reinvest in things like the stadium and players.
How much is Griezmann worth, really, in this market, considering the 2016 that he has had, and generally his form over the last two seasons, just been quite phenomenal? 60 million isn't enough. What would you expect would be needed to pry him away from Madrid?
He does have a release clause that's in the hundreds. It's not much over 100 million, but that would be, as a flat fee, I can imagine that being the amount, like the same as Pogba. I can't imagine him being worth more than Pogba, especially on current form. But if it's going to be 60 million, I would say it's going to have some players involved as well, as a hypothetical.
You wonder if Zlatan makes a return to La Liga or anything like that. I think we'd all like to see that in Spanish football, although I'm sure there are plenty that wouldn't. Does Spanish football in general look at this and think, hey, this is another way that we can capitalise on Premier League money and make that work to our advantage? We can go and get pretty much the cash that we need to remain sorted and solid as a big club in Spain. Do Spanish clubs like this idea of the Premier League has so much money to spend because of the TV rights? Because it just means that they can sell their players at extortionate prices. I know 60 million doesn't appear a lot in the modern day game, but it is a tremendous amount of money that I'm sure the three of us will never see in our entire lives, even if we combined everything that we ever earned all together as well. Barring, of course, Aldo's lottery win, which we're all banking on.
I do think that every league looks at it like that. You look at Isaac Success and Didier Ndong, the two players that moved from Ligue 1 to the Premier League in the summer for about £13 million. And, I mean, they were just rubbing their hands with glee when Watford and Sunderland pop up offering those prices. You can only imagine what they do when Man United come in with these even further bids.
Yeah, it's on all levels of the Premier League pyramid. I mean, I think that you look at a team like Middlesbrough, and they have, I don't know how many Spanish players already, but there's already a lot of Spanish players making the move in the last 5 years of all abilities. You know, you have the mega stars that make the move, and then you have, you know, sort of these mid-table players that do so as well. So I think that obviously they're quite happy to do so. The only thing looking at Griezmann specifically is, while Atleti were historically a selling club, this whole new philosophy that we've talked about, their new stadium, their new badge, all of these sort of this new look that they're trying to develop, you can see that maybe they would want to hold on for them more in a symbolic case, not just for what he played, how Griezmann plays, but also, you know, just the sense that they want to be a different club. They want to be at the same level as Real Madrid and Atleti and Barcelona and Bayern. So, you know, that not only would they not want to lose Griezmann because he's a fantastic player, but because that would mean that they're not changing and they're not being the type of club that they want to be after their latest rebranding.
What about transfer rumours elsewhere? You mentioned James Rodriguez, who we're all, I'm sure, expecting to leave Real Madrid at some point, and the shock would be if he didn't. But would Barcelona being linked as well on Marca's webpage this morning with Soriano from Villarreal, who's been a huge figure in terms of their bright start to the season for the Yellow Submarine. And Soriano would be an almighty pickup for this Barca side in terms of replacing perhaps Iniesta. Not immediately, but certainly a player that has distribution in terms of being able to deliver passes and create openings, and also is happy to do a bit of the dirty work in the heart of the pitch as well.
I think he'd be a bit of a short-term replacement, in kind of in my eyes, because he's like he's ready-made in a large sense of the word, and players like Andre Gomez have come in and shown that they're not ready-made. Soriano's doing it in La Liga week in, week out for a good team at the moment. I think he's the type of player that they can drop in to that starting lineup from tomorrow, basically, and they'll get a good few years, maybe more, service out of him while they get their act together in terms of thinking about the world-class kind of replacement that Iniesta will eventually need.
It'd be interesting when Villarreal play Barca when the two clubs meet on January the 8th as their first game back, and how far this transfer story has developed from that point. I'm sure everybody will be looking pre-match at the reaction of Soriano chatting with the Barca players and after the game as well. We'll keep an eye on that one as it comes through. What about any other predictions for 2017, Aldo, aside from James leaving? Not just transfer-wise, but in 2017, are we going to see the Sevilla be able to, for instance, stay with Barca in terms of that La Liga title race? Do you think that the likes of Celta Vigo are going to be able to keep it together at the back, or Espanyol going to be able to build on the positive finish they've had to 2016 and move themselves up the league table, up into European spots perhaps? I mean, there's a huge bunch in terms of the fight for the European spots below the big two or three.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll start with Sevilla. I think that that they will finish ahead of Atleti. I think that making that statement now is probably not too difficult to imagine, as much as it would have been a couple months ago. But I do see them finishing ahead of Atleti and probably behind Barcelona and Madrid. I don't think that they can keep up in the league, at least, for too much longer and keeping that same pace. In terms of the Europa League spots, I think that they'll definitely be battling it out. The sides that you mentioned, I think, obviously, most recently, Espanyol looks like the most defensive. They're sort of a team that is, their identity is sort of really shining through right now. But I'd say that Real Sociedad is the one that's really impressed me the most this first half of the season, and would expect big things towards the second half of the year.
What about yourself, Mark? Predictions for 2017, the new year coming in, because we can all look back on this and say, oh, we got that horribly wrong at the end of the season.
Well, I think Real Sociedad will qualify for Europe. Then the test will be if they can keep that going. As ever, we've seen it before. Celta Vigo kind of qualified for the Europa League this year. They've dropped off. One of the big things to keep an eye out for the middle part of the year will be if Valencia can stay up. Them dropping out of the league, I think, will be a huge moment in La Liga 21st century history. And then the end of 2017, I think we'll be looking at Leganes showing that they're the new Leicester City and they'll be top of the table.
Yeah, bold predictions to say the least from me. Been on the sherry a little too early this Christmas as we move.
If anyone's willing to offer me odds on that, I'll happily put a pound on it.
Well, to be honest, considering all the odds that have been blown out the water in terms of 2016, and I'm not just talking about in football, I'm talking about across the globe in terms of situations that have taken place, I think you might actually get shorter odds than you were hoping for, Mark, with that prediction.
Yeah, I kind of missed the boat, haven't I?
Aldo, Mark, a massive thank you for joining us on the show today. Always appreciate it, and look forward to getting back to the Spanish football in 2017 with you both, gents.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah, thanks, Ali.
Thanks very much, gentlemen. We will speak to you on the other side in 2017. So, who takes that third Champions League spot behind Barca and Real Madrid? Are Sevilla going to be able to hold on and contest for the Liga title? Will Real Madrid walk away with it and perhaps get back-to-back Champions League titles as well? Are Atleti going to be able to pull themselves out of the hole they find themselves in? Will they keep hold of Griezmann? Where does James go as well in the next 6 months or so? And, of course, who is going to be facing the drop and who will be stuck in the middle of the pack in La Liga? All that will be answered on the other side of the New Year break as we head into 2017. A big thanks to everybody who's been listening to the podcast in this first half of the season. Remember to follow us on Twitter @MarkerInEnglish. Get onto iTunes and Audio Boom as well and subscribe to the podcast. Leave your comments there if you wish, and we will try and get back to you as soon as possible. And of course, remember to get onto the pages of Marker in English. That's www.marker.com/en, www.marker.com/en, for the latest breaking news and views from around the world of Spanish football. Have a very good festive season indeed. Enjoy the new year. And we'll see you on the other side in 2017. Have a good one.